This is very unusual, Clifford said. A new country asking for recognition. It doesn't happen every day. Clifford called the State Department, then reported back to Epstein. When the papers finally arrived, the name of the new country had been left blank to be filled in later because it was still unknown. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 195, George Marshall versus Clark Clifford. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. In 1948, Secretary of State George Marshall spoke at a birthday party celebrating President Harry Truman. There, as David McCullough describes, the Secretary of State praised the president with glowing words. Marshall said, quote, "The full stature of this man will only be proven by history, but I want to say here and now that there has never been a decision made under this man's administration affecting policies beyond our shores that has not been in the best interest of this country. It is not the courage of these decisions that will live, but the integrity of the man," end quote. Truman, as McCullough tells us, was profoundly moved by Marshall's praise of the president's foreign policy. And this, as Truman's biographer reflects, set the stage for the incredible decision that Truman would face regarding recognizing the State of Israel. David McCullough describes the meeting scheduled for Truman, Marshall, his advisor Clark Clifford, and members of the White House and State Department. In May, as David Ben-Gurion was preparing the Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel, a process that we will be describing in future episodes, Truman requested of Clark Clifford to make a presentation in favor of recognizing Israeli independence. And as he did so, the president had one person on his mind. McCullough tells us that Truman told Clifford, "You will be addressing all of us present, of course, but the person I really want you to convince is Marshall." McCullough describes the dramatic confrontation that took place on May 12th in the office of the president, a scene that included George Marshall, presidential advisor Clark Clifford, and Undersecretary of State Robert Lovett. Quote, "Truman made a few preliminary remarks in which he said nothing about recognition of Palestine, then turned to Marshall, who asked Lovett to present the case for trusteeship. Lovett spoke at some length, during which Marshall intervened briefly to report that during a recent conversation with Moshe Shertok of the Jewish Agency, he, Marshall, had warned that militarily the Jews were embarked on a very risky venture in Palestine, and should the tide turn against them, there was nothing to guarantee help from the United States. Truman then called on Clifford, who for the first time mentioned recognition, proposing that the United States make the move quickly before the Soviet Union did. The United States should not even wait until the new Jewish state was declared, but announce American recognition the very next day, May 13. As I talked, remembered Clifford, I noticed the thunderclouds gathering, Marshall's face getting redder and redder. This is just straight politics, Marshall said. I don't even understand why Clifford is here. This is not a political meeting. General, Truman answered softly, he is here because I asked him to be here, end quote. Clifford, as McCullough tells us, went on to make the case for American recognition, giving several reasons, including a quote from the Bible. Before General Marshall, one of the most influential statesmen on earth, Clifford, then a relatively young man, boldly cited Deuteronomy. Behold, I have set the land before you. Go in and possess the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give unto them and to their seed after them. Neither the political or scriptural arguments seemed to sway Marshall in any way. McCullough tells us that the Secretary of State then asked Robert Lovett to make the anti-recognition case again. And then the Secretary said the most dramatic thing that he could possibly express to Truman, a man that admired Marshall so much. Marshall said to Truman that if the president pursued this policy of recognition, he, Marshall, would not vote for the president's re-election. Writes McCullough, quote, that brought the meeting to a grinding halt. There was really a state of shock. The president, I think, was dumbstruck by it, Clifford would say, trying years later to evoke the feeling in the room. There was this awful, total silence. Yet Truman showed no sign of emotion. His expression, serious from the start, changed not at all. He only raised his hand and said he was fully aware of the difficulties and dangers involved, as well as the political risks which he himself would run. He was inclined to agree with General Marshall, but thought it best they all sleep on the matter, end quote. But actually, Truman was seeking for Marshall to be swayed, or at least hold back politically, because Truman wanted to recognize the independent Jewish state when it was born. Truman, as McCullough further describes, asked Clifford to lobby the State Department further. And finally, Clifford heard from State that Marshall, while still disagreeing with Truman's plan for recognition, would not express his opposition to the president's policy in public. McCullough continues, quote, that, said Truman to Clifford, is all we need. Clifford put through a hurried call to Elihu Epstein, an official at the Jewish Agency in Washington, to tell him that recognition would occur that day, and to get the necessary papers ready and over to the White House at once. When Epstein asked what was needed, Clifford had to say he didn't exactly know. "This is very unusual," Clifford said. "A new country asking for recognition. It doesn't happen every day." Clifford called the State Department, then reported back to Epstein. When the papers finally arrived, the name of the new country had been left blank, to be filled in later, because it was still unknown. End quote. Why did Truman, facing Marshall's pressure, refuse to back down? There is, of course, the biblical element. Clifford's citation of Deuteronomy was said, I think, because he knew that it would strike a chord with the president that he advised. There was also political considerations. In his book, The Ark of the Covenant, Walter Russell Mead notes that Truman's meeting with Weizmann may well have been influential in his deciding to recognize the Jewish state. But he also highlights an interesting political factor, which is that Truman sought a united Democratic Party gathered behind him in support of his reelection, and he therefore needed the support of Eleanor Roosevelt. Eleanor Roosevelt, in turn, would have wished for the president to recognize the Jewish state, seeing it as a vindication of the UN resolution and of the United Nations, of which she was a part. Meanwhile, as Mead further documents, another factor appeared which allowed for Truman to discount Marshall's fears of a Jewish defeat in the Middle East. As we mentioned yesterday, citing Mead, Marshall opposed recognizing the Jewish state because the Secretary of State was convinced the Jewish state could not survive. But events were in motion that made Israel's position seem stronger. In late March, a representative of Czechoslovakia met Ehud Avriel, the representative of Ben-Gurion, setting in motion the selling of arms. As Mead notes, and as we've mentioned from Paul Johnson, this was because of a brief moment in time when Stalin decided to help the Jewish state, despite Stalin's hatred for Jews. The acquisition of arms by the Zionists, Mead tells us, gave Truman renewed confidence in the Jewish state's ability to survive. What all this reveals is that many different events came together. Harry Truman's friendship with Eddie Jacobson, Harry Truman having a young staffer like Clark Clifford that was ardent about the Zionist cause, and the immense irony of the importance of the UN, which is that an interest in vindicating the United Nations led to Truman recognizing the State of Israel. The United Nations, which is identified today with opposition to Israel, was, in the beginning, a vehicle that helped assure the United States' recognition in the first place. Norman Podhoretz, in a fascinating review written many decades ago in commentary of Harry Truman's memoir, praises the president for his Cold War leadership. Norman Podhoretz wrote as follows about Truman, quote, "What he appears to see today as he looks back over his career is a peculiarly American success story. He is the poor farm boy who made good by dint of healthy ambition, hard work, faithful service, luck, and mastery of the political craft. But the craft of politics, he reminds us, is two-sided, involving principles on the one hand, and on the other, the ability to muster the support that makes it possible for a politician to realize his principles and become a statesman. No one can deny that there is an important truth in such a representation of his life, and it would be true even if he was indeed half aware of the dubious practices of some of his appointees. But we can see quite another moral significance in his career when we contemplate the fact that this extraordinary man, who has probably done more than anyone else to keep the world alive on the edge of an apocalypse, was able to emerge into greatness only by becoming, in his own eyes and in the eyes of the nation, a perfect symbol of the average American." End quote. Truman, for Norman Podhoretz, drew on the strength of his connection with America itself. And one can say that in this moment of Truman's recognition of the State of Israel, the president was hearkening a bond between the United States and the Jewish state that was to be revealed in the time to come. This, then, is the fascinating story of Truman's recognition of Israeli independence. In the episodes that follow, we turn to these very same days in the Holy Land and how they led to one of the most important moments in Jewish history. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.